you'd like to just introduce yourself from the point of view of the guest, and that might make sense to everyone.
To the fellow view participants last night, sitting there was a bit like an episode of Men Behaving Badly. There was such arrogance, belligerence, but most of all I felt that the people at home were completely turned off. Here were five men telling us about a shared future who were behaving in the most appalling manner. I mean, what's your view? How can we move that debate on? As you say, the leadership should know that the issue is settled. The Good Friday Agreement has settled unionism. They are safe within the union. So why can't we move on beyond identity to education and health and the things that apparently matter to everyone?
But we reduce everything to the politics of fear. So you better come out and vote for me, or Marty will be First Minister. You better come out and vote for our unity candidate, or this will happen, the world will end. You know, and that's why we reduce everything to that. When said we should actually be trying to get some sort of hope into politics rather than always doing the fear factor. And last night was a pretty unedifying display of when talking about a shared future, and they've pretty well a bun fight about it. It was just, I mean, the whole thing was just awful viewing, and it goes to the way they treat the minor parties in the executive. But if you're not being treated like that, why do you keep going back? Come out of the executive and just say, right, you're the government, you won the election, get on. But you cannot keep that system going where people get turned off and more people disengage from the political system because they just look, what's the point?
Could I just ask you a question on that myself, which is, if the minor parties came out, who would be Minister of Justice? Would it be Gerard Kelly, or would it be Sammy Wilson?
I would have to say to that, Duncan, that's one of the problems that the Alliance Party has got itself into, because it's actually now trapped in the executive, because the executive possibly, well, I think actually probably, would collapse at the moment if the Alliance give up justice, because they couldn't. They'll have to put it into OFM, DFM.
Undo it together.
Or they couldn't. They don't want to give up finance for Sammy to take it, and they definitely don't want Sinn Féin to get it. So, but that's the thing. If you're actually working in a normal system, you'd work out your programme for government, and you wouldn't be so head up about who got what, because you would know this is the direction of travel of the government.
Okay.
Hello, I'm an Alliance Vice Chair. I just want to know...
Sorry, I was critical. Oh, dear. Duncan's a closet Alliance man, too. Sorry,
Duncan. Did you say that? The independent chair?
Independent chair, sorry.
I'd just like to know, how would you guys differ from the Alliance Party? Because the only difference I can see would be that you go into opposition, but is there any other differences as well?
Well, you can't just say the only...
Through their closet Alliance.
That's a terrible allegation.
Actually, we've sorted out the closet in the last 2 weeks. But there are two fundamental differences. One is the absolute necessity for an opposition. It's maybe an unfortunate term, the word opposition, because people think it's negative. What we mean is a democratic alternative, because it's the only safeguard you have in a democracy, that every 4 or 5 years the people, if they choose, get to vote one lot out and another lot in. It's the bedrock of all democracy, and we've got ourselves a situation now where it doesn't really matter who you vote for, more or less the same people get in. And that's why voter participation is falling, because people go, well, what point? My vote, does it matter? Does it make any difference? You've got to get to the stage where it does matter. So it's a really big point about having an alternative to the government. Even if you never get in, you still hold them to account. You're still able to go and point out some of the ridiculous things that people spend money on that they think we don't know about. But if you want to think, since you acknowledge that one, the second thing that we see ourselves as being different, we are unashamedly pro-United Kingdom. Right? We are absolutely saying to people, as we say it here and now, Northern Ireland's future is best served within a devolved administration within the United Kingdom. We think that sometimes people are afraid to make that debate, to go off and have that argument, because it becomes unionism versus nationalism or some sort of identity politics. To tell you, the financial support, the stability issues, I mean, to be honest with you, I say to you, the real strategic, there are two strategic, well, in fact, there's only one real strategic issue for Northern Ireland, which is how you maintain stability. Because if we go back to the tribalism and the sectarian trench warfare, it leads to some of it. You destroy everything. We look at it all over again. So I have to say, if you look at the demographics, some people tell me that it is now 55% unionist, 45% non-unionist. But if you look at the young people, it's the other way around, you know, in terms of this. And if we're going to get to this 50 plus one, where suddenly there's going to be a big vote. This is not a good idea. Actually, what we want to advocate, is a Northern Ireland that is secure enough, confident enough to say this is the constitutional settlement for quite a long time, until eventually the people maybe change their mind. We will be arguing for the United Kingdom for as long as I can foresee. I can't see any, but you know, that's what it looks like. But you put that aside, and then you say, let's find some policies that we can actually tackle. I don't see why you cannot unite against youth unemployment or educational underachievement or building a better place to go back to it. And I think that's really the issue when you come back and say, look, there is a difference. And if you'll forgive me, I've gone on a wee bit, but I'll put a challenge out and you wish to come back to it. Part of our problem is whenever we looked at the Alliance Party is that it's been around for 40 years. It has not managed to make the breakthrough. And we believe the breakthrough is there to be made, but you need fresh, energetic, dynamic people coming into politics. You need to do something different on it, and we think that we can do that in a different way. We do not disagree with some of the policies that the Alliance Party have, and we've been quite vocal in coming out and supporting them, but we don't think it's got the necessary dynamism to actually change Northern Ireland.
See, you're a bit of a unionist yourself, wearing the flag of another great union. I know.
Okay. Yeah.
If you could follow David Cameron's whisked bolster, as an Australian, London Crosby.
Thank you.
Do you think it would be a prospect that you could actually identify people in the population of Northern Ireland who would vote for some sort of proposition along the lines that you've outlined to us that would cross the ways?
Well, the general thing is, we think that what the flags issue did was crystallise people's thinking. Up until maybe a year ago, 18 months ago, actually there was no opportunity for the sort of thing that John and I were talking about, because the economy was still doing okay-ish. The flags issue hadn't happened. The distant Republican thing was, well, that's one or two issues coming wrong. But we're now in a situation where people are going, do you know what? Politics does matter to me. I can no longer afford to ignore it. I can no longer say, oh, it's those idiots up on the hill, you know, I'm doing my thing, but you're good. So politics affects everybody. And we do need to get a situation here right now. Frankly, it's not about candidates. It's about the people. It's about people of Northern Ireland going, are we going to slip inexorably back into the sectarian warfare that we had in the past? Are we just going to sit here and let it happen? And our belief is that there is a mood out there for people go, do you know what? I feel uneasy about where things are going. And John was quite direct when he talked about Peter Robinson. Let me tell you, our assessment of that is that Peter Robinson tried to bring his party onto the centre ground. He tried to reach out. He tried to make the speeches. And you know what? He didn't bring his party with him. You could see whenever you're doing the cutaways that they weren't clapping whenever he was doing the let's try and do the reach out bit. They were only clapping when they were waving the flags. But he was strong enough at the time to bring it through, but he's lost ground. And the disaster for unionism under Peter Robinson's leadership is that the flags process has destroyed any form of collective working together. you know, any sort of strength or whatever, it's, and where you have no confidence, where you have no hope, you go nowhere.
Yep.
So our, the direct answer to your question is, we think there is a constituency out there that are happy with the broad sense of Northern Ireland within a United Kingdom. They do not want to deal with sectarian politics. They want to move away from that and get issue-based good government. And the only way we'll find out is by having an election. And that's where we stand.
Yes. I mean,
well, I'll take the next one. Then.
Okay, well, there's three people have their hands up. I can take them in batches if there's three people, and then you can decide which ones to ignore.
It's always a gift for politicians.
For all of that. We've all done that. Carmel.
Hi, I'm Carmel Wilson, lecturer in politics here. I've enjoyed your presentation so far. The Alliance Party has suffered, as have other smaller parties with a cross-community focus, including the Women's Coalition, partly because of the electoral system. Is that not a huge obstacle for you, that this single transferable vote that the major parties were very wedded to at the time of the agreement really makes it very difficult for smaller parties with a good spread of votes across, a good spread of support across Northern Ireland, but without that depth in any constituency, to make the breakthrough? And, you know, the Alliance Party, I think it's a factor that affects the Alliance Party still. It also affects the SDLP, I believe. I think a different electoral system would favour them a bit more. And if we had had something like the Scottish Parliament or Welsh Assembly electoral system, we could have had a little more prospect for shaking up politics.
I'll take that one, but we're
going
to take...
I'm going to take all the questions.
James Dillon from the UNESCO Centre, also a former SDLP staffer, so I think an voting system, maybe mandatory voting for the SDLP might...
not just mandatory voting for the SDLP.
A couple of points. No problem with opposition. I've made an argument for that quite a lot in the past, but On the shared future side of it, you know, the agreement was an agreement in multi-party talks, so all parties in the Assembly need to be involved in any process around the shared future. I think they're very willing to leave it to any two parties, no matter who they are. I also think there's a role for the two governments there as co-guarantors of the agreement. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. The other point would be, it was in the recent peace monitoring report, which I thought was really interesting, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on, is in the context of a possible in-out European referendum in the context of a Scottish referendum, how do you see that changing the dynamics around whatever we want to call it around here, unionism, nationalism, north, south, east, west relations? And the final point, just to play devil's advocate, is that Basil, you said you were going to force things like integrated education and people, and then John, you said...
No, I wasn't going to force things.
Yeah.
I said the opposite to that.
Oh, well, I would like to know, why don't you really come out with some quite radical policies? Let's say, just for the sake of argument, on integrated education, make it statutory, something like that. Why don't you try that and see how the electorate responds to it? Because as you say, John, you said you were in a difficult spot in South Down, but why don't you use this opportunity, and I wish you well, because I think you have a great opportunity, to really make some radical statements about politics in the future here.
Okay, and...
David Mitchell from the university here. There's an argument to say that the only way we can have normal politics in Northern Ireland is that if we have a sort of traditional left-right socio-economic sort of spectrum of parties, whereas it sounds like you're very much, I mean, you're just another unionist party, you know, you're still very much defined by your pro-union. We're not sure what your socio-economic sort of vision will be. I know that there's also a criticism of the Alliance Party that they're ultimately sort of just based on the old orange and green division. So I just wonder what you think of that criticism.
You want to go first?
Do you want to take the electoral one?
We'll try and mix and match a few wee points on that. So let's deal with the electoral system. I suppose the secret weapon is that we think we can reverse the damage even under the current system. You see, there's a couple of things that people aren't aware of. If anybody that votes for me or votes for John need not bother voting 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. You know? And it's a strange thing. People say they give you a vote. I says, didn't. It doesn't make any difference because we've all got into managing the vote and there's nothing to transfer. You get a situation that the more perverse thing is that in Lagan Valley, in my constituency, we had 2 UUP candidates. We got combined about 7,500 votes in first preferences and we got 1 candidate. We had 4 DUP, but it's the last 2 that matter. The last 2, I think, had a combined first preference vote of 8,000. It might even be less than that, actually. But they got 2 seats for 8,000 votes and we got 1 for 7,500. So we didn't do the vote management terribly well. And part of the system comes down now Bill White, one of the great gurus in these fields, tells us that if you're not, when all said and done, if you're not in the top 6 with first preference votes, your chances of getting in pretty minimal. And so we go through all of this palaver that nobody really understands the voting system. Now, actually, if we, in the centre, as it were, went out to go and explain to people, the whole way it was intended to be is you don't have a free vote. You can vote for a John or a Basil because you like them, and if they don't get in, you've actually got something else. We need to re-educate people about the way the voting system works. And people complain about, you know, MLAs that they've never heard of. That's because they slavishly follow the voting patterns that other parties dictate to them. So we think we have an education process to go out and do it. And in essence, my answer to your question is, any system that you look at, once the parties get their head around it, they know how to maximise it to their advantage. And so, whilst I understand the advantages of a list system or whatever, you can back in and do that, fundamentally, I get the stages. What we have to do is just go out and win the argument. We have to go out and put it to people. And it really is make your mind up time, you know, to the electorate. It says, look, if you're happy with the way things are going, carry on voting this way. And if you're not, whether you're a Catholic or a Protestant or neither, you've got to go and start voting for people that you want to vote for. And that means you have to be a wee bit more informed and engaged. Most people tell me, I don't really do politics, you know. That's them, doesn't really do politics, they don't say it to me. But anyway, some of them are saying it to me, he said it to me. But he says, don't really do politics. You come back in. And you've got to say, just look, I'm really sorry, but politics is now actually your business. All we're asking you to do is once every 4 or 5 years, would you go and please, you know, give us your opinion? So we do have to engage and inspire and say to people, this is your issue. And I think that's been a failing, particularly, I have to say, on the unionist side, where the vote has dropped like a stone. So we've got a job of work to do in that. So the short answer is, we have to work with whatever system is there, and it's about going out and winning hearts and minds. A couple of issues about when we're looking about left and right politics that are put forward. Left and right is largely irrelevant in Northern Ireland, or in fact in any devolved administration, because things like welfare reform are decided by Westminster. The money that we get, whatever money it is, comes from them, and whether they are right wing or left wing basically decides the policy. All we can do probably is take a bit of the rough edges off it if you come down, but you know, even with that, there's a danger with breaking parity. I just didn't say left and right is something you might say internally, this is what I'm about, but it doesn't really affect politics. What you can do, if you were really interested in welfare reform, is you could say, look, we have to build a better economy. We have to go out and find a way of getting our young people to train at university for jobs that actually exist. You know, you have to know this is where you will get a job. Creative industries, you know. I mean, people don't realise that 3/4, I'm starting to be corrected, but I'm told 3/4 of Northern Ireland's foreign direct investment comes from creative industries, not Dette or, you know, Invest NI or any of those sort of things, but the creative industries. It's Game of Thrones and things like that. And so you look around about advanced engineering or various other things, there's loads of jobs out there, but we're just not training people for it. So I think that's where you can actually really get a communication exercise in here. It says, how do you make the best of what we've got within a devolved settlement? So there was an issue then about CSI, and this is the last point that John will...
Do the education, then I'll do the shared future.
Okay, so if we did about education, a fundamental tenet of what we think about the way forward is the rights of individuals. If you asked us, maybe it is a bit back to left and right, but if you asked us, were we for big government or small government, state intervention or relying upon the individual, we would be for smaller government, relying upon the individual, devolving as much decision making as possible down to the citizen. Now, we'd like it to be informed decision making, but it does come to a whole host of things. Once you establish that principle, you come to things like, so who decides what school your child should go to? Is it some sort of randomised factor? Is it you go to the closest school to your bit? Or do you say, no, education is better if parents are really involved and we should support parents that are trying to get their children to the school that suits them? You know, is it right to say to people, and you'll forgive the use of the word geek, because now it's coming into form, but if you're a geek like I was and you like doing science and stuff like that, if you go to a non-geek school, you end up having a tough time. Conversely, if you're not a geek and you go to a geek school, you end up having a tough time. So what you actually want to do is develop a diverse education system where you try and match as best as possible, this is the type of education, this is the ethos that we're going to get across, and we want more specialism, more diversity, not less. We do not want one size fits all. We want a better system. And parents should be involved because you're making decisions really early on. I spoke 2 days ago to Ballymacash Primary School P7s about their solar-powered lights they sent off to Africa. It was an inspiration. These are the years of wonder, 10 to 13. That's when people make up their mind whether they want to go down science or language or something else. We've got to enthuse them at that stage. And that's what we ought to be doing with our education system, getting the right people to the right place. And so when you come back down and say, do I want to use it as a policy tool? Do I want to come along and say, you should go to that school because we've decided we want to have Catholics and Protestants living together? You know, that's busing. That doesn't work. What I actually want to do is create an environment where the people in their own time and in their own way will start to integrate. They'll start to live in mixed areas. They'll start to say, do you know what? We have a lot in common with each other. And when it happens, Northern Ireland will be a better place. But if you try and shoehorn anybody into anything, if you try and push them to do thinking, you actually get a kickback, you get a negative reaction. It doesn't work, in my opinion. We need to form a better way forward. Have we covered all the points that you want?
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So that's... I have to check, right?
Yes. Sorry, leader, you were brilliant. Absolutely inspired. I'm still hoping to be deputy leader. I sort of get used to the title.
It's like second again.
We haven't actually had a leadership contest yet, but
it's only a matter of time.
Only a matter of time before a challenge. On the electoral system, I think, Basil, no electoral system, you're almost back to the old Churchill line, like, democracy is the worst form of government, but for all the others. You know, so, you know, if you think we're in a tough battle on a single transferable vote, go and look at dear old UKIP, and when you're working with First Past the Post. I mean, it was one of the lessons we learned doing UKIP, just how difficult it is to unseat a sitting incumbent Member of Parliament. It's very difficult and First Past the Post. One thing I don't particularly like about the list system is it breaks away a member from a constituency. I knew this during the last European election when one of Jim Nicholson's colleagues was a little surprised that he was going doing this grubby thing called canvassing, because he was in the list system and he was top of the list, so it really didn't matter what he did during. I think he took like the 4 weeks off during went and lay on a beach somewhere. There's ups and downs with all systems you get. We have to put the challenge out to people that, you know, for South Down, that a number two or number three isn't always enough for me. I need a number one, so, and I need Deirdre to re-register back home. The stuff in the shared future in two governments, James, I just get the sense here, 15 years after the agreement, is it not time we actually matured and said, we can handle some of these things? I mean, would anybody have thought even that
even at the very end of Tony Blair's premiership, he'd still be coming across to Northern Ireland about 6 weeks before he left office to finally get devolution up and going. Never mind not even his successor, but his successor's successor. And quite frankly, Cameron has quite a few problems on his desk without having to worry about Northern Ireland. I mean, Owen Paterson's time as Secretary of State, probably his biggest achievement that he would admit to, was that he kept it off the PM's desk. And I suspect Theresa is in the same boat. Enda Kenny has a few problems of his own. I just feel it's time. If we can sort this out, why do we need the two governments always coming in? I think it's right that Theresa Villiers comes in occasionally and says, you know what, you're not getting more money unless you sort this out. And do you think we'd even have had yesterday's announcement if Theresa Villiers as Secretary of State hadn't been threatening the money pot? That's what focuses Peter and Martin. As regards your point about having all the parties in there, for what purpose if you're just ignored, slighted, sidelined? What big achievement is your colleagues in the SDLP or Alliance or Ulster? What big achievement are you getting in there? You know, so you maybe get to change the name of the document. You know, wow, big deal. Do you think you'll change anything of substance? They won the election, they're the government. Let them get on and govern and provide the leadership. That's my view. If they want help, it's up to us as an opposition to look at the document critically, get advice from academics and hear what people that have years of experience in this, like Duncan, who are actually saying. Are they saying this is a good first step? Are they welcoming this? We've the document come out. I want to see an action plan for each government department coming from that. Will it look and feel as if actually this might work? You know, I don't like all of it, but this might actually deliver something. That'll be the test in a few weeks. And are we getting the political leadership? You know, come back to what I said in my opening remarks. Are we getting the political leadership from First and Deputy First Minister that when something hits the buffers, we don't retreat into the Unionist trench and the Republican trench and just start lobbing insults at each other, as it did with the flags thing? Instead of coming out and showing real leadership, we just immediately retreat into the bunker and say, oh, look how awful the other side is. That's the change that I want to see coming about. So I'm not convinced the two governments need to get involved. They have enough issues. And, you know, other parties, to be in there and ignored, I don't think is a great any great advantage. If you want to go, that's fine. But considering two out of the three parties have already walked out, albeit one of them was my entire fault, and Basil's,